Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Cricket Collective once again with me, Neil Manthorpe. My guest today is unique in the game as the only man to have coached four of the major nine test-playing nations. He led his native South Africa to their first ever test series win in Australia and the first in England for 43 years before moving to Australia and coaching their national team for just long enough to acquire citizenship. He won the Champions Trophy with Pakistan and is now head coach of Sri Lanka. He also sits on the ICC's cricket committee, which advised on the changes in the laws and protocols for playing the game in these coronavirus times. So welcome to Mickey Arthur. You are the only man in history to have coached four of the major test-playing nations with respect to Zimbabwe, Afghanistan and Ireland. It's extraordinary to me. Does it feel extraordinary to you?
It does. It does feel extraordinary. When you say it like that, Manners, and I was actually, when you sent me the questions the other day and I actually looked at them, that's when it actually struck me for the first time. And it does seem extraordinary, you know. And I think the first one is you want to coach your native country. So doing that was, coaching South Africa was fantastic. Australia, as you say, got our citizenship. Although there was a period there where it was okay, but then you haven't coached till you've coached in the subcontinent. I fell in love with my 3 years with Pakistan. It was amazing. I loved it. And I feel exactly the same vibe and the same project with Sri Lanka. So I'm loving it and couldn't be happier.
So the Australia didn't go so well. I'm going to come back to the homework gate. But otherwise, I mean, you've had wonderful success with South Africa and Pakistan.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I was very lucky. You know, there were some wonderful players. You know, and I always talk about my time with South Africa. I was a young coach, as you well know, man. As you documented it all the way through, I was a young coach with a very young team, and we kind of worked it out as we went along. I was a very young captain in Graham. I was a very young coach. But we were lucky to have an abundance of fantastically talented players. And we worked it out as we went. So I got lucky there with South Africa, without a doubt. You know, we gelled, we had some good fun along the way, and we had some great success, which was great. And that allowed me the opportunities to go to Australia and coach in Australia and also the opportunities to coach on the 2020 circuit, but also to coach Pakistan and Sri Lanka. So I will always be indebted to my time with South Africa. I loved every minute of it. I hope I contributed in a small way, but we had some fantastically talented players.
Let's rewind to your own playing career then. I guess I'm referencing the debate about whether it's necessary for international coaches to have played international cricket. You did come very close. You played 110 first-class matches though, 150 List A games, 6,500 plus runs, at an average of 33.5 with 1,300s. When you look back at your first class career, it was over a decade long. Are you satisfied?
Yeah, I think so, Manners. And you were very, very kind there in your assessment. I do think I got everything I possibly could out of myself as a first class cricketer. I did come close to playing for South Africa, really close. But to be honest, and if I'm brutal with myself, I probably just wasn't good enough to play international cricket. I was very handy. I was a journeyman on the provincial circuit. I could do a really good job for the team. And those runs were scored. A lot of my time, and I hate referring to it as the apartheid time where there was no international cricket. But a lot of those runs, that's when I started. So, you know, those were tough times, very, very well contested games. So I'm comfortable, I'm happy, but coaching was always where I wanted to get to.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, in conversation with Mickey Arthur.
For everyone who says that you have to have international experience, I think there's two or three players or people, observers of the game, who say no, it's not necessary. But having played that much first-class cricket and having come that close to international cricket, was it ever an issue? Did any player ever say, well, what do you know? You don't know what it's like out there in a test match.
No, maybe one or two Australians, but nobody else. No, not at all, man. And I think the way you do your job and the way you run your cricket team as an international coach, the players will see through you if you don't do the job right. You know, there's no doubt about that. You can't bulldust your way along in international cricket. You've got to be on the money. You've got to be providing the structures. You've got to be providing the environment. You've got to be honest as you can be. You've got to build a system of trust. And you have to be able to tweak guys' techniques. You have to be proficient enough to help them be the best they can be. So if you can't do those things, you'll be found out very, very quickly in international cricket. The thing with me is one of my massive bugbears is when you talk coaching's a career. You know, I always see players go, you know, well, so what are you going to do now when they're coming to the end of their time? Oh, no, I think I'll just go into coaching. Well, that's like just a throwaway line. You know, the best coaches in the world have done their apprenticeship. And that goes without saying. The best coaches in the world have coached at a low level, have gone and got their coaching certificates, have put the time in and grown and then become good at their job and then have the opportunities provided for them. And it does give me a little bit of a bugbear when I see really good players just think, okay, well, I'll just go into coaching now without ever knowing what goes into being a coach. And as I've said to you earlier, you know, you'll get found out. If you don't do it properly, you'll get found out a lot of the time. Your man management skills is so, so important.
This is a quixotic thought, but has it ever occurred to you that how different a player you might have been if the Mickey Arthur of the last decade had been there to coach you as a young player?
Yeah, I've kind of thought that, and everybody gets their own coaching style. And look, I had some very good coaches during my time. The one that stands out for me being the late Eddie Barlow. And a lot of my coaching philosophies centered around what Eddie taught me, what Eddie taught us as a group, particularly during the days at Free State. He was phenomenal. Eddie was almost ahead of his time. So I've tried to take the best out of the coaches I've had and then imply them with my character. Because the one thing you can't be and you can't sustain is if you coach out of your character. Because who you are is who you are. You've got to make, just like any player, where you've got to make the players the best they can be, you've got to make yourself the best coach you can be, but you can't be different to the person, to the man. So I've tried to take everything I could on board, but stay true to myself in terms of my character.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, in conversation with Mickey Arthur.
Having observed you for the last 15 years, though, I have seen some changes in your style. I sense that you have become quite a lot more forthright.
You spot on, Manners. You and I sit here the best coach I can be now. That's like being the best player. You can't walk into the supermarket and buy experience. You only become the best by learning, by getting that experience. And South Africa was so good for me. Yes, there were times I was forthright there. I'm actually quite a tough customer. I'm actually fairly stubborn in my ways, and I want things to run properly, and I want things to run smoothly. I get irritated when things don't. So those are things that are generally behind the man and behind the camera, as it were. But yeah, I was very lucky, and I've worked with wonderful captains, and obviously myself and Graham learning and developing together as a team was invaluable. And I've taken all those lessons and I've applied them. And as I've gone along, I've made myself the best I could be. And you're 100% right. I'm certainly a lot more forthright now in terms of my views and in terms of the way I want things to operate.
The only demand that I'm aware of you making increasingly, in fact, of your teams, is fitness. You were absolutely uncompromising about that. There were one or two members of the Pakistan team who didn't meet your standards in that regard.
I just thought that with the Pakistan team, we needed to set standards, Manu. So I'll always say I operate the environment in an environment of excellence, and that's a non-negotiable. And with excellence, batting and bowling, you can be the best you can be, but you can lose the battle on the day. The bowler can be better than you, or the batsman can be better than you. But in terms of your fielding and in terms of your fitness, your preparation, in other words, that's controllable. You can control that. And we want those players arriving the best prepared they can be to then go out and bat and bowl and win games for the side. So yes, I have become totally uncompromising on that, because I don't think you can compete in the modern game, in the modern area, without being very proficient in your fitness, and that leads to better results in your fielding, batting, and bowling. I always say to the players, particularly in the subcontinent, manners, it's not a box ticking exercise. This allows you to turn in the heat, in the extreme heat, in the extreme conditions, it allows you to turn those 70s into match-winning hundreds. It allows you to bowl the last over of your spell with the same intensity as you've bowled your first. And it allows you to be as awake and as mentally tuned in that heat when a chance presents itself in the field. So we make no compromises on that.
Superb victory. Well, I've been around the world watching this game. Look at tears. They are crying out there. Ponting cannot believe this has happened to his team. The South Africans at the Bullring today have seen the best one-day international ever played.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe. This week's guest is the former South Africa head coach, Mickey Arthur.
The 4-3-8 game, or as the Australians call it, the 4-3-4 game. People forget about that one-day series is that it was tied at 2-2.
Yes.
And the third and fourth games had both been one-wicket wins. And then, so it's all set up for this decider. Australia go out there and make 434. Do you make a living out of it? I mean, like doing 4-3-8 game talks? Is it like having created a successful record that just pays you royalties every year?
I wish it just kept on paying royalties, but no, it was, I mean, what a wonderful, and I think you summed it up so well, man, is that what people don't realize was we went 2-0 up as South Africa. Australia hit back in the third in PE and the fourth, winning by one wicket in both of them. And that fourth game was for me one of the best one-day internationals, because I remember it was Mick Lewis and Stuart Clark, I think, won it for them at the end. And then obviously set up that 4-3-8 game. What a day, fantastic. And the range of emotions on the day are very well documented. But I'll never forget, when I went to Australia, I signed Mick Lewis to come and play for us in the 2020 comp at Western Australia. We needed a bowler. Mick Lewis had just been released by Victoria. He got on the phone. He phoned me and came down. And we sat there and reminisced about it. And he was obviously pretty dirty about the fact that he was the one singled out who lost his career. He went for 100, obviously, in the 4-3-8 game. I mean, every bowler went, as you could imagine by the numbers, went for plenty. But people forget that in the fourth ODR, he was man of the match. He won that series, he won that game for Australia to get them to the Wanderers to have a crack at winning the series. And he's forever dirty for that. And he's and he also is incredibly dirty by the fact that Brett Lee and Nathan Bracken didn't bowl out, and Ricky Ponting bowled him out on that day. What a day. I mean, geez, it was unbelievable.
And that is the end of the innings. A wonderful batting performance by the Australians. Of that, there is no doubt, a world record batting performance. So there it is, 434 for four off the 50 overs bowled.
When you drew up the targets to chase 434 or 435, go on. Take up the story, because the players love it.
Well, it was ridiculous. And that's gone after the very well documented. You know, I mean, I remember seeing Stan the Duck. He was the Standard Bank mascot. I'll never forget having a look at the lunch break, and Stan the Duck was just to the left. I was sitting on the balcony at the Wanderers, absolutely gutted, thinking the world had ended. I was, you know, I could hear the chant from the crowd, "You're going to be sacked in the morning." You know, that was the kind of thing I heard. And Stan the Duck was sitting with his head in his hands. I thought, geez, even the mascot's feeling it here. And you know, the Jacques Callis quote around, I think the bowlers have done their job. That's a pass score. It's up to the batsman now, type thing. And I remember going to the board, and I remember it vividly. And I'm sitting there going, what targets do we set here? I mean, how? Because you always work the target, and then you work back. So you had end of 50 overs, 435. How do I put this into little stanzas along the way? And I think I got to at 10 overs, was we needed to be like 110, but we couldn't be more than one wicket down. And I thought, wow, this is interesting. So I said, boys, look, this is where I've got it. And I sort of went 110 and 10, no more than one wicket down. And everybody just burst out laughing. And I'll never forget grabbing the paper off the clipboard and said, stuff it. Just go and play. Let's see what happens. And everybody said, yeah, well, let's just go and hit the ball and see what happens. And, of course, it was absolutely sublime. I mean, what a day.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, in conversation with Mickey Arthur.
So you've got the Test series now to worry about a year later. So you're on that return trip. And just to put it into context once again, South Africa had been trying to win in Australia for 98 years, 11 unsuccessful tours. They managed to draw a couple, but it was the last frontier. There's very, very few records that haven't been broken, haven't been achieved in international cricket. And so you set off and you did things differently. I mean, you had literally been, not planning it every day, but you had been literally talking about it on and off, planning, scenario planning for 3 years.
Yeah, we had. We actually had matters, but every test tour that we had an added significance in achieving the end goal. And when we looked at the fixture list, that 2008 year in test cricket was an absolutely massive year for South Africa. We had Bangladesh and Bangladesh, India and India, England and England, Australia and Australia, all in 1 year. And I remember us using the Bangladesh tour to fine tune our game plans, to fine tune our structures. And to be fair, in Bangladesh they pushed us. They pushed us quite hard in the first test before we pulled away and comfortably won the second. But that gave us the confidence then to go into India. We won that test match in Ahmedabad where we bowled them out in one session before lunch. And then, you know, batted beautifully and won by an innings in Ahmedabad, and then got hijacked a little bit in Kanpur where they prepared that wicket that exploded from day one. But a one-all series in India was very credible as well. And then that set us up to England. But by then, we knew our brand. We knew our strategies. Everybody was very secure in their roles. They knew what was needed from them. And there was a tight-knit squad of 15 guys there that were going to win it for us. And we had built them and built them and built them.
There it is. That should be it. That's it. The winning runs came from the man that mattered, the captain, Smith. What a fantastic innings. 154 not out. South Africa win by 5 wickets. They win the series. The first time they've beaten England in a series in England since their readmission to Test match cricket.
That England tour was fantastic. You know, we played struggled a little bit at Lords, hung in at Lords, played beautifully at Headingley, and then I'll never forget that innings at Grahamsmith, fourth innings. I think it's the best fourth innings innings I've ever seen from a batsman to win us that series in England at Edgbaston. That gave us the confidence then to go into Australia.
A.V. de Villiers, that's an outstanding test match for you. Runs in both innings, 100 in the second innings. That is the sort of test match you dream of as a player. Take on the world champions in their home turf and to not just compete but to win a game like this. That's a test match he will remember for the rest of his life.
Australia could so easily have gone wrong, but we ended up chasing, what was it, 415 or 416 in Perth. I mean, nobody had ever chased that amount, and we chased that, and then, you know, once we chased that, we were so supremely confident of going to Melbourne and getting the win, and everything just fell into place. I mean, you can't. We looked like at one stage giving away a first run, a first run deficit to Australia, and then, you know, Paul Harris and Dale Steyn come in and take the game away. And an interesting antidote with that was, I remember the boys. The morning we did our warm-ups, and I think it was JP Dumney and Paul Harris that were batting, and we did our warm-ups, and you know the MCG is massive, you know, the viewing area is a long way away, so the whole team stayed in their whites in the change room. Vouch had taped up his fingers. We were all ready to go and field, and at 5 o'clock, well, JP Dumney had got it, played an innings of his life. And ably assisted by Paul Harris and Dale Steyn. Dale got 70-odd, and Paul Harris got about 45 and saw off the new ball. And we were still sitting in exactly the same places after tea on that same day. You know, it was, as I say, the stars aligned. But the stars aligned for a reason, man, is because we had put the work in. You know, if Mother Cricket always smiles upon teams that have put the work in, done the job, and done their preparation well, and we certainly had, and Mother Cricket smiled on us, and we got that ultimate win, which is, it was fantastic. It was just an amazing feeling in that dressing room in Melbourne, knowing we were the first team to come to Australia and win a Test series.
It was more unlikely in my mind that victory than the 4-3-4 One Day game. I mean, as you said, when the seventh wicket fell, South Africa was still 210 runs behind.
That's
ended up with a first innings lead and winning before lunch on the fifth day. I mean, it was impossible. It was impossible. I still look back and think, you couldn't make that up.
No, you couldn't. You could not make it up. And it was amazing. I still speak to Paul Harris and guys like that, and It was just amazing. I mean, do you remember that catch that went straight up to Michael Hussey and the ball went into the sun to Dale Steyn on about naught, and he's sort of pulled away from it. You know, who could write that? The ball's gone lost. Michael Hussey, one of the safest hands in the game, he didn't see the ball and it landed like next to him, and Dale's gone on and got 70. It was, Mother Cricket certainly smiled on us, but she smiled on us for a reason, man, because we had done the hard work.
So it ended strangely with South Africa. I mean, I don't think anybody saw it coming, really. It seemed still to be a smoothly sailing ship, very successful. And then I guess you'd done your 4 years, 5 years, 4.5 years.
Yeah.
But it did end oddly.
Well, Manus, I did my 5 years. And that year after we beat Australia, it was kind of, that was the year we needed to challenge ourselves to go up to another level. And it kind of, I looked at myself as a coach, and I'd probably got a little bit stale. The boys who were young, because remember, it was a young team. We built that young team. Yes, there was the likes of Smith, Callis, and Boucher, very senior players. But Staines, Armlers, De Villiers, Morkels, Prince to a point, were all guys that had come into that setup, and we had nurtured and built along the way. And sometimes, man, as I think, as I've said to you, Mother Cricket, you know, Mother Cricket smiled on us 2008 because we had done the hard work and whatever. We got stale, and maybe we got a little bit cocksure of ourselves as a team, and we sort of might have got a little bit above our ambit, just a little bit, and forgot what had taken us to that level. And I take full responsibility for that. And you know, that was Mother Cricket saying, "Hang on, Mickey, you know, you guys aren't that good," and she, and it was almost the time to go.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Catches the ball and that's the end. Extra bit of bounds and trying to look to hit it too hard. The edge flies in the air, nicely taken by Brad Hodge. That brings the end of this match. It's been Australia all the way.
This is the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the former South Africa, Australia and Pakistan head coach, Mickey Arthur.
It was barely a year later that Cricket Australia came courting you, and you got that job. I'll be honest. I don't know whether I told you at the time, but I always had doubts. I always had doubts about that. But I guess you couldn't say no. Did you have doubts?
No. Right. Well, I couldn't say no. As you've said, it wasn't the right time for me because I didn't understand Australian cricket well enough. I'd had one season with Western Australia. I didn't even know everybody in the system. Obviously, Australia cricket had the Argus review, so it was a tough time. There was more power to the coach, more power to the captain. There was suddenly a full-time selector, and we all reported into this new full-time cricket position, which was Pat Howard. So it was a tough time because everybody was kind of jostling for their areas of responsibility. You know, where does the buck stop with me and start with him? And we were under the microscope quite a lot, and that first year went quite well. There was obviously things within the team that weren't right. It was a team in transition. You know, I can say it quite openly. The captain and vice captain didn't get on at all. One had gone. Apparently, this had been going on for a long time. Apparently, there had been issues when Ponting was captain, and I didn't know that whole history. So I walked into thinking this is fantastic without actually knowing exactly what was going on. Where I was at fault was I walked in and tried to run it like I ran South Africa. And without realizing that no, I should have just sat back and had a look and understood the dynamic and understand the culture just a little bit more. So I learned a very, very valuable lesson out of that. And I'd like to think when I went to Pakistan and now Sri Lanka, I learned some very valuable things where culturally, sit back, have a look, understand the culture you're working in, and then develop your philosophy and game plan around the culture of the team.
And Dhoni smashed it. With two fielders in the deep, but don't worry about them. Let's land it in the stands. And that's kind of sealed the match.
So you were in India getting thrashed. And so you used a tried and trusted coaching method. You asked them to apply their minds and to write down their thoughts. It obviously got infamously labeled as homework gate. What happened there?
Well, what happened, man, is we lost the second test. I mean, we had a very young side. We had only Shane Watson and Michael Clarke. were the only two players in that squad that had played Test cricket in India before. So, you know, I remember it was a very young batting order. David Warner, Eddie Cowan, Philip Hughes, Usman Khawaja, Stephen Smith. It was a very, very young batting lineup intermingled with Watson and Clark. And we got soundly beaten in, where was it, Hyderabad. And I'm in the change room at the end of the game. I said, guys, look, there's two tests to go. We're going to have 3 days off. Let's go and refresh ourselves totally. In those 3 days, just look yourself in the mirror. Spend half an hour reflecting, because all of us are going to do it. Support staff as well. We're going to spend 3 hours reflecting on how I can get better. And then is there three things you think that we could do better together as a team? So it was literally a 10-minute sort of session with yourself to understand what you could do. And I remember, you know, I got some great stuff. You know, some guys put stuff under my door that was where they clearly thought about it. A couple of guys sent me text messages with, this is what I want to do. Because my idea was using all that information and then setting up the training sessions for leading into the third test match, because we still had the Border Gavaskar trophy. If we drew the series, we'd still go home with it. And then I was going to use their suggestions in setting up their personal training sessions leading into the test match in Mohali. And then, of course, you know, four guys didn't do it. And I sit back on that time and think, if I wasn't vocal about the four guys hadn't done it, because only I knew. And I'll never forget Eddie Cowan asking me on the plane, what's the responses been like? And Pop was sitting next to me, and Gav Dobie was I think next to Eddie Cowan. And I said, oh, it's been great. And he said, you know, has everybody done it? And I said, yeah, no, just four guys haven't done it. They must have just forgotten. And I'll never forget, you know, guys are going, okay, which four? And with that escalated. I shouldn't have given out the information first and foremost. I should have gone to those four guys and had a quiet word. I then shouldn't have involved as many people as I did. I involved the whole support staff. And of course, the whole support staff, when you're going to make a decision, it's easy for them to have input when the decision is so big, but they don't have to pull the trigger. You know, so I ended up pulling the trigger on it and ultimately paying the price, because once that was done, I was on a hiding to nothing, you know, and then, you know, it sort of went on and bumbled on for sort of six months. I lost a lot of the players, you know, particularly the four guys that were involved in it. And it bumbled on. Warner's involved in an altercation with Joe Root and a pub at the Champions Trophy. And of course I carried the can for that. So, I would do things a lot differently if I had that time again. But it certainly wasn't homework gate by any means.
I just couldn't believe what I saw.
Yeah, the footage doesn't look good.
Look, I don't care who you are, you can't tamper with the ball.
I saw an opportunity to potentially use some tape, get some granules from the, you know, from the rough patches on the wicket and try to change the ball condition.
It's premeditated cheating. It's blatant cheating. Yeah. It's disgraceful. It's not accepted.
It's Australia yet again.
Obviously, it's clear as day what's happened. It's not right.
To see the way my old man's been.
Thanks, everybody.
And my mum, it hurts.
You can see there, he's just shattered, you know. I really feel sorry for him.
Look, I'm a believer in sport, especially if you give it, then you've got to take it sometimes, haven't you?
I mean, on-field behaviour is a big thing for you, and I know that it always has been. You show respect to your opponent, and you respect Mother Cricket. So you must have watched a range of emotions as Darren Lehman's team over the next course of the next 3 or 4 years generally, I mean, disintegrated. The on-field behaviour became worse and worse, and Darren Lehman appeared now, not even in retrospect. At the time, he appeared to be utterly in favour of it. In fact, he was, because he endorsed pushing the line, headbutting the line.
I went through a phase there of disappointment and anger. And let me first say, Darren Lehman's a hell of a coach. Like, I'm friends with Darren. He's Darren's a very good coach. Australia needed an Australian coach. And that was told to me very, very blatantly by one of the players over breakfast. We'll never move forward without an Australian as coach because an Australian understands us. So, and Darren was the Australian man. They loved him, you know. And Darren's what they say in Australia is a larrikin. He holds court. He sits around the bar. He talks. The boys listen. He's a very, very good cricket coach. He's got a magnificent brain. What I didn't like was as because half of Homework Gate, once I had done it, I got the whole team together and said, boys, we are not respecting the game. Our discipline is going for a shambles. You're treating some of the support staff like servants. And I actually came hard at the players just after that. And I saw it all then start unfolding because as they had more and more success, I thought their behaviors started to, and it's well chronicled. And I spoke to the players about it. Yeah, you know, I'd sent Davey Warner and myself got on well. I'd sent Davey Warner a lot of text messages. Dave, just pull your head in, you know. And then I was really disappointed with how that South African tour panned out because I'd seen it coming. I'd seen it coming, and you know, at times, and the Australian players would say it for themselves. You know, you just think you're bulletproof. And they went there a phase where they kind of thought they were bulletproof. And, well, of course, it all came tumbling down. And they've rebuilt themselves now very nicely under another good friend in Justin Langer.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, in conversation with Mickey Arthur.
I mean, you refer to that 2017 tour, Sandpaper Gate tour. But many England players and other players around the world reckon that... that Australia had it coming for the last 20 years.
Yeah, I think they went through a phase where you know, under the Warnes, the McGraths, the you know that team, you know they were incredible and they were just such a good cricket team. So they kind of got away with that, call it arrogance. And there's a very fine line for me between confidence and arrogance. So, you know, they got because they could back it up. And then there was a phase where Australia started battling. So they became a little bit meeker and a little bit milder. And that was around the 2008 period when we went there. It was then England beat them in successive Ashes. And they kind of became this meek team. And I think the whole point for Darren in terms of his coaching was we've got to get back to the Australian way. So the blueprint for the Australian way was that incredible team who just dominated because they could do it with their mouths, but they could dominate with their skills. I mean, they were incredible. And they kind of got back to that, but they didn't, you know, they couldn't quite back up the strut, you know, with the performance. And they kind of clashed a little bit and then they thought, okay, well, the only way is we've got to be Australian. And they thought, oh, we've got to just gob off and shout and carry on. When I think they've kind of reflected on that, I mean, they're a bunch of, they're very nice guys. And as they, when you get them on a one-on-one, they're all very, very nice boys. And I think they've now matured. They've come out of it. I think they're very well led now by Justin. He's a good man. And I think they're playing now a brand of tough, hard cricket. But whatever that line was, they kind of don't cross it anymore. So, and their cricket's got better because of it.
So, do you agree that that great Australian team abused the opposition because they were beating them?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, we've got to be careful with the use of abuse. You know, they certainly sledged them for want of a. Of a better word, but they backed that up because they were an unbelievable cricket team. An unbelievable cricket team. Hayden, Langer, Ponting, the Wars, McGrath, Warne, Gillespie, Gilchrist, Haddon. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal cricket team. And you know, so they did have that swagger, and rightly so they had that swagger because they were just that damn good. And that almost then sort of became, for me, became like the Australian way. And so every other team thought they had to play like that, but they didn't quite have the skill of those players.
That's gone off India. Sartrans takes the catch and throw over. Pakistan win. 1988, India blown away in the final, and it's Pakistan who are through. Over the line, massive win. Great scenes.
This is the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the former South Africa, Australia and Pakistan head coach, Mickey Arthur.
I feel very conscious that I haven't left enough time to talk about Pakistan. So the Australia job ends. You do some private coaching in Perth. You talk of establishing an academy. But then Pakistan popped up. You had another phone call.
Yeah, I did. I went and did a couple of leagues. I went to the Caribbean Premier League. I went to the Bangladesh Premier League. And I ended up going to the Pakistan Super League in its first year with Karachi Kings. And immediately I felt a kind of attraction. It was a system crying out for structure. It was a system, in my view, crying out for leadership. It was everything you want in a coach as a project. And you know, things didn't go well for them in the 3 months after that first Pakistan Super League. And I got a phone call. And I jumped at that because I saw so much talent to work with, but just needed proper direction, proper goals, proper strategies, proper disciplines, and I felt we could coax that talent out of the boys. So it turned into an unbelievable three years. I loved every minute of it.
Champions Trophy, 2017. Opening game, Pakistan-India, doesn't get any bigger. One of the biggest sporting occasions in the world. Absolutely hammered by 100 runs.
Yeah.
You and I bump into each other on the outfield afterwards. I don't think I interviewed you, but you said, we'll bounce back from this. I think we're going to win it. And I thought, he's lost it. Mickey's lost it. He's just been beaten by 100 runs. It just flopped on the biggest stage. And then 2 weeks later, you did win it.
Yeah, and let's be honest. I walked past you, and I was thinking, don't come back tomorrow. But you know, I was thinking, I expected the you know how it is, effigies burning in Lahore and Karachi, and you know, sort of, because the one thing with coaching in Pakistan and coaching the subcontinent, the noise, the emotion is such a part of it, which just gives you that adrenaline rush. So we were absolutely thrilled. I remember saying it to you on the outfield. I remember you coming down the steps. I said, we'll win it. And I thought, what have I just said? I must be going bonkers. I thought exactly the same as you. But I was kind of looking for a familiar face in that hostile crowd just to kind of pep myself up with. And we had a really good chat. We practiced well. We made some brave decisions. And the one thing I learned was in that Champions Trophy first game, I made the conservative selections. And at the end of that game, Safi and I sat down, Safraz, and said, stuff it. We gang now. We gang aggressive. We're playing the young boys. Let's get them in. Let's see what they can do. And it was just such an unbelievable ride. It has got to be, without a doubt, the best 3 weeks of my coaching career. The ride we went on, the emotions, the ecstasy was quite phenomenal.
I had the sense that you were so invested in that Pakistan job, and you were looking forward to the test, building the test team up, and because there is so much talent there. But I mean, the sense I got was similar to Australia. They wanted a Pakistani coach.
Yeah, 100%. Now people talk about our World Cup. Our World Cup was actually fairly good. We had two poor games, and the West Indies game that started the World Cup cost us dearly because our net run rate was one that we could never ever get back almost. So we had to qualify in the top four. We couldn't tie for fourth because our net run rate was never going to be enough. And we didn't play well against India for some unknown reason in Old Trafford. Oh,
yeah. Bolle! Kuldeep Yadav does it with a beauty. That's a superb delivery. Beat it through the defence. And how often does it strike for India?
Other than that, we played exceptionally well. We ended up tied fourth. So we lost out to New Zealand on net run rate. We beat both New Zealand and England in the preliminary games who were finalists. And I felt come the back end of that World Cup, we were hitting our straps. Had we got to a semi-final, we would have been a damn dangerous team. It was because I felt that same confidence level that we had at the Champs Trophy hit at the back end of that tournament. And so that was disappointing. I then had lunch the next day, straight after the World Cup, with Essen Mani and Wazim Khan in a beautiful little restaurant just down from Mr. Essen Mani's house in St. John's Wood. And we discussed the next 2 years. It was a done deal. I remember leaving from there to go straight to the airport to fly to South Africa for my daughter's wedding. And I knew, you know, it was great. I was coming back. So I'd flown back to South Africa. I flew back to England. And then from England, I used my ticket to fly back to Lahore. Now, if I had any inclination that I wasn't going to continue, I wouldn't have flown back to Lahore. So I kind of did. But then that Friday, you know, it was a strange week because I had to then go in front up to the cricket committee. And I remember asking Essen and Mr. Mani in his house, so what happens if the cricket committee says that they want to go in a different direction? He said, Mickey, it would have to be a damn good reason to get it past me. So I was pretty assured of that I was gonna stay on. But as the week progressed, you know, you get that feeling. And then I walked into that committee meeting, and it was hostile. It was hostile. Wazim Akram was on Skype. Wazim Khan was there. Mudassar Nizar, Zakia Khan, Misbah, and a lady, Uruj Mumtaz. And that was the committee that I had to present to. And if it, the night before, I phoned Wazim Akram. You know, I get on really well with Wazim. And I said, look, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to say. What do you suggest? And he said, hey, Mickey, it's going to be tough, but just go and give it your best. I said, yeah, I've prepared a 2-year business plan of how we're going to take this forward. And he said, that's great. Fantastic. And I remember walking in, and I had this 2-year business plan, and I gave the 2-year business plan out to all the members of this committee, and they had clearly spoken about this 2-year business plan, because Wazim Khan said to me in the meeting, he said, "Well, this is irrelevant because we're not talking about the next 2 years; we're talking about the year previously." So that was the end of the World Cup. He was talking about the performances preceding the World Cup, or performances post Champions Trophy, I think he said. It's not about the next 2 years. And I thought, well, this is strange, because I've prepared this. You were in Mr. Mani's house. I've prepared this dossier, and the only one who knew that I was going to give this dossier out was Wazim Akram. And I walked in, gave it out, and you told me, no, we're not going to talk about it. So clearly there had been a chat around that. And That kind of disappointed me just a little bit. So it was very hostile, and I walked out. And I remember going back, and Grant Flower and a couple of the support staff were at the. I said, "This is tough." I said, "That was a tough meeting." I said, "You know," I said, "Shit, we might be in a little bit of trouble here." And the weekend, it was the weekend. So the weekend went by. Monday, nothing happened. Tuesday, I get a phone call in the morning to go and see Wazim Khan. But Wazim Khan's asked for me at 9:00. He's asked for Grant Flower at 9:15. He was scheduled a phone call with Azam Mahmood at 9:30, and he was speaking to Grant Ludin at 9:45. So I thought, hang on, this isn't so good. But still, I remember having a cup of tea with Grant. I said, okay, I'll see you on the way out, and I'll tell you what's happened. And I went in, said, no, we're moving in a different direction, and walked out. Grant's gone in. I said, don't even bother. He said, what do you mean? I said, we packing our bags. And he went and shook hands, and we turned around and walked out. So it was pretty disappointing as to how it ended, man. But 3 years in Pakistan as an international coach is a hell of an effort. And just thinking about, you know, this pandemic struck, you know, who knows what would have happened to me with the Pakistan job. But clearly Mother Cricket had in her mind made out that was the end for you. And you go through 2 or 3 tough months, and suddenly Sri Lanka presents itself.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, in conversation with Mickey Arthur.
And finally, Sri Lanka. Colombo's just such a beautiful place to be based. And again, like Pakistan, there's no shortage of talent on the island. Are your feet firmly under the desk? Do you feel like the job started now?
firmly under the desk, Manners. You know me. I give it 100%. I'm loving every minute of it. Unbelievably skilled players. I've seen us in every format. The boys present so well. They train the house down. Again, they were looking for direction. They were looking for leadership. They were looking at a system they could trust, where they felt that they were protected, looked after, allowed to nurture within the parameters. And I feel we've done all that. I'm so looking forward to this gig because, again, I'm very privileged to have it. And it is a wonderful place, and there's some wonderful cricketers, and it's going to be a wonderful project.
Enjoy Colombo, and we'll catch up. I don't know when and where, but we'll catch up sometime as soon as we're allowed to travel and tour. Nicky Arthur, thank you so much for your time. Been a great, great pleasure here on the Cricket Collective.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Manners. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I can't wait for our paths to cross again soon.
You've been listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 and our exclusive interview with the current Sri Lanka head coach, Nicky Arthur. If you missed any of the show or wish to catch up, you can always download the podcast from the Following On feed, available on Apple Podcasts, Acast and Spotify. From me, Neil Manthorpe, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.